We read in the lives of the saints of plans and actions which offend many even pious readers. They disapprove of them in themselves. They disapprove still more of their being held up either to the admiration or imitation of the faithful. Now, if when the saints themselves were alive, redolent with the odor of their sanctity, the vividness of their bright example, and the solemn authentication of their frequent miracles fresh upon them and around them, if at that time there was almost a general disapprobation of their plans and modes of actions, as in the case of St. Alphonsus Liguori when he founded his congregation, if, as again, St. Alphonsus was, they were left persisting in a kind of proud-looking isolation, if even popes and bishops were against them, and they gave way only to the pressure of actual command, if the pious were scandalized and the Holy Inquisition interfered, if calumny seemed for the whole truth and the truth hypocrisy, if these wonderful men also went so far as to consider this opposition and offense the best proof they could have had that their work was the will of God, as St. Philip Neri and our good Bishop Chandler are said often to have refused to join in a work because it was not opposed by the good kind of men, if all this took place where they were personally concerned, must not something of the same sort be always expected towards their lives, especially if those lives be faithful and minute? And will not this easily account for the diversity of opinion and the somewhat offended temper of objection which saints' lives have generally elicited? What the unkindly world and the remaining worldliness in the ordinary faithful found so uncongenial in the living saints will still be uncongenial in their lives, although, of course, in the case of Catholics, the intervention of the Church and the honors she has decreed to the saint will soften and diminish this, and will naturally make criticism less positive and more modest. Let us now take some instances, in order that we may not lie open to a charge of exaggeration. In the second report of the auditors of the Rota, in the case of St. Teresa, we read that she was so completely abandoned by everyone that nobody would even hear her confessions. The auditors tell us of St. John of God and St. Jerome of Milani that they were counted and treated as mad. Surius tells us the same of St. Louis, King of France. As to persecutions from heathens and heretics, we know what St. Francis Xavier suffered in India. St. John de la Marche from Fraticelli, St. Pasco Baillon from the Huguenots, and St. Didicus in the Canaries. And for examples of the persecution from bad Catholics, we have the priest Florentinius trying to poison St. Benedict, as St. Gregory tells us, the spite of Fratre Elia against St. Francis and St. Anthony of Padua, the sufferings of St. Vincent Ferrer, St. Teresa, St. Charles Borromeo, and the particularly cruel persecutions which St. John of the Cross underwent in his great enterprise of reforming the Carmelite order, to say nothing of the martyrdoms of St. John Nepomuk and our own St. Thomas. But it is more to our purpose to adduce instances of the saints being persecuted by good men, whom God, for their own humiliation and the merit of his servants, allowed to mistake the saint, or to be deceived by calumny. St. Philip Neri was persecuted by Roman prelates under Paul V and St. Pius V for his pilgrimages to the seven churches, which were put down to vainglory or seditious humor, and he was disgraced. St. Alphonsus Liguori, after having been persecuted by Father Ripa and made the laughingstock of Naples, was no sooner deserted by his first companions, Madrini and others, at Scala, than he was denounced by name from the pulpits of the capital as a warning to other self-sufficient dreamers. St. Teresa was denounced to the Inquisition, and so was St. Ignatius. The venerable abbot bearer was deposed by a delegate of the Holy See, and bore his unjust punishment with the utmost patience for 7 years. The glorious St. Joseph Calasanctius, whose life is such a study for these times, was summoned before the Inquisition. He was deprived of his office of general, his order was abolished and reduced to a simple congregation, and was not restored until after his death by Clement IX. All of this was in Rome itself, and under the eyes of sovereign pontiffs, whose officials, without any fault of their own or any want of justice, were deceived by a malicious conspiracy. and we are actually told that so frequent and grievous were the persecutions which Saint Joseph Calasanctius underwent from good men and prelates in authority, that the postulators were more than once on the point of giving the cause up in despair, such tedious difficulty they have to make their ground good against the promoter of the faith. In like manner, Leo IX was imposed upon and set against Saint Peter Damian, and Saint Gregory tells us that the Holy See gave ear to the calumniators of Saint Equitus, who accused him of preaching without authority. Nay, even the absence of this kind of persecutions seems to have amounted almost to an objection in the case of Saint Francesca Romana. It was hinted that she was entering into her glory without this suffering, though, as everyone knows, it pleased God to allow her to be subjected to frightful assaults of the evil one, which the auditors actually put in place of other persecutions, and which may be seen at length in the second March volume of the Bollandus. Thus, as Benedict XIV remarks, in all causes it is to be seditiously inquired whether the servants of God suffered distresses, and what sort of distresses, and with what patience and charity they bore them.